Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello, thank you. You've tuned in to Smoke News Radio, episode 53. Here, maybe 57, I don't know. The numbers, there's so many things going on. Sometimes I don't get the numbers right. But we're still going. As we've got from thedetroitnews.com, read to you by Jason Brodsky here, written by Jennifer Vissel-Silink, cannabis industry. Suddenly, pot legalization seems more likely. The United States could legalize marijuana at the federal level as soon as 2020 if Joe Biden is able to win the presidential election and Democrats take control of the Senate. It's a dramatic change in expectations from 3 months ago when it appeared Donald Trump would most likely win re-election and the CFPC analysis had put the odds of meaningful reform at near zero for 2020 and unlikely for 2021. Quoted, a fact has become incredibly obvious from the chaotic 2020 is how quickly things can change. Quotes, analyst led by John Zapparo wrote in a note, we stand by our statement for 2020, but for 2021, well, when the facts change, we change our minds. End quote. With the economic fallout from the CV, the social unrest following the murder of GF by P, Biden's chance of winning the election in a plausible Democratic sweep has increased, likely. The former vice president is... That's a really stupid article. I apologize to read it. Biden will be under pressure from the left wing of the Democratic Party to move candidates forward because of the social justice issues, says Curaleaf Holdings Incorporated Chairman Boris Jordan. There has been some disappointment after a Biden unity task force didn't embrace the same cannabis policy proposals from Bernie Sanders' campaign. Most importantly, it left out full deschedulization, opting instead to make marijuana a Schedule II drug rather than a Schedule I. However, Cohen of Curaleaf Holdings wrote that it could be simply a first step. The platform still represents the most aggressive yet for a Democratic nominee. Thank you. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Next on the roll, we have from the USAHerald.com, Massachusetts Mayor Jessie Correa, extortion trial delayed again, written by Jackie Allen, read to you by Jason Brodsky. The trial for ex-mayor of Fall River, Massachusetts, Jessie Correa, 28, has been delayed for the second time this year. U.S. District Court Judge Douglas P. Woodlock announced that a trial date would not be possible until at least January 2021, citing concerns over the CV pandemic. I think this is a case that should not anticipate going to trial until at the earliest January, and maybe not then, quotes Judge Woodlock. The trial date previously established is not one that is realistic in the light of the pandemic and the continuing state of emergency. Quotes, defendants who are not being held in custody, like Correa, will have to wait longer to face a jury. By all accounts, the last 5 years have been a wild ride for the baby-faced mayor who has been compared to Billy the Kid. Correa was elected to mayoral position in 2015 at the age of 23, making him the youngest mayor in Fall River's history. A Law 360 article reported that despite the indictment, he survived a recall election in early 2019. Rather than bowing to pressure and resigning, Corriere took a leave of absence until his term expired. The leave of absence allowed him to collect his $119,000 a year salary through the end of the year and retain his title. Corriere faces multiple charges. Corriere was arrested twice while he was still mayor. His first arrest in 2018 was for charges that he defrauded his investors through his startup company, Snow Owl. While still in college, Corriere developed an app that was capable of aggregating regional businesses' social media posts into a single stream of content in order to entice nearby consumers with offers and coupons. It is alleged that Corriere spent more than $231,000 obtained for investors for personal expenses. Prosecutors say he used investor funds as his personal ATM so he could live a lavish lifestyle and pay off student loan debt. He then filed fraudulent tax returns to cover the theft. Last October, Corriere pleaded not guilty to the wire and tax fraud charges and continues to maintain his innocence. Corriere was arrested again on new charges in 2019, alleging he extorted marijuana businesses while serving as mayor of Massachusetts town, Fall River. He faces a 24-count federal indictment that includes charges of fraud, bribery, and extortion. It is alleged that he received hundreds of thousands of dollars from marijuana vendors in return for a letter of non-opposition, which is required in Massachusetts to open new marijuana businesses. Prosecutors are also charging him with soliciting bribes from a building owner seeking permits and making his chief of staff, Geneva Andrade, pay him half her salary in exchange for her job. In case United States versus Corriere et al., case number 118 CR 10364, United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts. Next on Smoke News Radio, from the Boston Globe, written by Yvonne Abraham, read to you by Jason Brodsky. While equity efforts flounder, Massachusetts police make millions off marijuana store traffic. Details. In Brookline, where it has another dispensary, NETA has paid local officers $1.58 million in overtime since beginning medical marijuana sales in 2016. Thanks in town to a town requirement that at least one police detail be present whenever the dispensary is open. About $950,000 of the total came after NETA started selling recreational pot in March 2019. The town itself has raked in about $158,400 in administrative surcharges on the details and plans to allocate another $435,000 in separate fees paid by NETA towards its police department this fiscal year, some of it towards officer healthcare costs. Police officers in the two communities are hardly alone in their windfall. Across Massachusetts, marijuana companies complain that local officials frequently require or pressure and to spend large sums of traffic details that are unnecessary, intimidating, or both. While municipalities say that details help manage increased crowds and traffic around marijuana stores, critics say they amount to a little more than a cash grab. That's because in nearly every case, police details are paid directly from the pockets of marijuana operators, on top of the separate community impact fees worth 3% of each company's annual revenue that are paid to their host municipalities directly, on top of an ostensibly designated to offset the cost of increased traffic and other consequences of hosting the marijuana facility. Local officials counter traffic details are not a cost borne of municipalities, but an hourly service companies hired directly. Worse, the critics argue, the payments are a perversion of a marijuana law designed to benefit those hit hardest by racist policing practices, a stance resonating at a time of widespread protests calling for reduced police funding and increased investment in vulnerable communities. Shailene Title, a member of the State Cannabis Control Commission, quotes, "I'm deeply disturbed. State and local leaders have a historic opportunity to answer a national movement seeking racial justice, but most seem content to let police take home millions of dollars in questionable payments and tax revenue while shrugging at the racial justice mandates in the same law." Quote, "How long are communities of color expected to wait for the opportunities we promise them? Commission policies are meant to provide a leg up for people and communities most affected by the drug war. But so far, larger investor-backed concerns have dominated. Just three of the dozens of marijuana facilities that have opened around Massachusetts are owned by participants in the Cannabis Commission's Social Equity and Economic Empowerment Programs, or designated by the state as a disadvantaged business enterprise. Meanwhile, the Cannabis Commission's annual budget for its statewide social equity training and technical assistance program is just $300,000, fraction of the legal marijuana spoils hauled in by Massachusetts police officers from ETA alone, and a sum so low the program's director quit in protest last month. Shakia Scott, the former director, quoted, "Equity applicants are still not receiving the actual aid they need. I wasn't supported at the proper resources. We're never given to it. It's ridiculous that the police are profiting more off this than anyone, especially those disproportionately impacted by the prohibition." In a statement, a commission spokesman said, "Other aspects of the agency's budget indirectly support its equity mission, and that officials have been diligent in developing and implementing policies and procedures to effectuate an equitable industry." Adding to the frustration of advocates, the state legislature appears poised to rebuff a push to pass long-stalled bills that would address some of the biggest obstacles facing disenfranchised entrepreneurs, including one creating a no-interest loan fund for equity applicants. Instead, House lawmakers are debating a police accountability bill that would tap 109 million funds filled by state marijuana taxes and fees to retrain officers. While the state's marijuana law calls for some cannabis revenue to go to police training, the provision was met with backlash from progressive legislators who noted that the law also mandates funding of restorative justice efforts. A Globe analysis in February found that Massachusetts has so far only used marijuana revenue to fund the commission and existing addiction treatment programs. An amendment to the police bill proposed by the state representative Liz Miranda of Boston that would have mandated equal or greater spending on equity efforts compared with police training failed to draw enough support. Quoted, "The fact that there's only one black-owned cannabis business right now makes it clear we haven't done our part as legislators," Miranda said in an interview referring to the Pure Oasis marijuana store in Boston's Grove Hall neighborhood. Another reform sought by advocates currently stalling the state Senate, despite an endorsement from Cannabis Commission, would crack down on municipal demands for large payments under the auspices of so-called host-community agreements. Under current state law, municipalities must document the actual costs incurred by local marijuana firms and only charge them a, quote, reasonable related community impact fee. With no apparent enforcement of those limits, however, most cities and towns simply charge the maximum 3% fee allowed by the law, or even more, and retain broad discretion in how they use the funds. Northampton Mayor David Narkowitz defended the requirement that NETA pay its 1.2 million police detail bill separately from the 2.6 million it has paid in impact fees, saying the city did not formally require NETA to hire details and that other high traffic businesses, such as construction contractors, also voluntarily do so. Quote, "Because the details are not a cost borne by the city, we would not utilize community impact offset fees to offset them," Narkowitz said, adding that another newer dispensary that recently opened in the city has not hired details because it is in an area with better parking and traffic flow. Northampton has used about $1 million of the fee money to improve roads, bike paths, and other infrastructure at near NETA, while the rest is held in a dedicated mitigation fund. The city has also earned a further $2.6 million through a 3% local sales tax on recreational marijuana. NETA chief executive, Amanda Rositano, said her firm hired the Northampton detail because private workers in Massachusetts cannot directly traffic on public roads. In Brookline, details are mandated by the town. So the NEDA always agree they are needed. There's an overabundance of caution that around the cannabis industry, and I don't think it's always necessary, Rositano said. They're looking to minimize the police presence at our sites. Brookline spokesman Jordan Mablum said the NETA and the town had mutually agreed to the detail requirement regarding the $435,000 in impact fee money that will be allocated to the town's police department. He said the local officials are enabled to use the funds to serve the community at large. Industry leaders agree that local requirements to hire police details, especially when a marijuana store first opens, are nearly ubiquitous, even if the sums paid by NETA are unusually large. For example, cannabis firm Cultivate paid Leicester $60,000 for details and related fees, separate from its annual $250,000 impact payment, while Garden Remedies said it has paid a total of nearly $240,000 for police details at its dispensaries in Marlboro, Melrose, and Newton. Leicester's town administrator, David Genreau, said if details are paid for out of Cultivate's impact fee, the company could just ask for details anytime, even if they were not needed, just to use up the money. Detail payments, he added, represent a charge for services rendered and are not technically part of the cost of having a facility in the community. In some cases, detail payments directly detract from equity efforts. Brandon Pollock, the chief executive of cannabis operator Theory Wellness, said his company's accelerator program for equity applicants could have sponsored two entrepreneurs instead of just one, with the more than $100,000 it spent on police details at its shops in Great Barrington and Chicopee. Quotes, if a local police department wants to have details there and feels it's the right thing, I can't refute their professional opinion, but that's what the community impact fee money should be for, he said. Marijuana operators also argued that the presence of armed officers can be jarring to cannabis consumers and medical marijuana patients who may have run-ins with the police over the drug when it was illegal. That concern is particularly acute in Black communities. Quote, it pain used to have a detail, said Kobe Evans, co-owner of Pure Oasis, claimed his hands were tied when his shop hired a police detail after its opening in March, though the city denies requiring one. Quoted, we have hired all this staff to mitigate the lines because we trying to guard against the expense and because so many people in this community have been scared by their dealings with the police. Unfortunately, details happen whether you want it or not. This is the cost of doing business, said Kobe Evans, co-owner of Pure Oasis. Next on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brochker, we've got TheLegalAdvocate.com by Michael Quinton Mills. Oh, I'm sorry, written by, I don't know, Michael Quinton Mills, 24, charged in incident injuring 3-year-old boy. Spanish Fork, Utah, July 20th, 2020. Michael Quinton Mills, 24, of Provo, faces serious charges after striking a 3-year-old boy as he walked in a crosswalk in Spanish Fork on Monday, July 20th. Michael Quinton Mills charged accidents, faces serious charges. The boy suffered a severe injury to his femur and remained hospitalized. Mr. Mills had THC in his system and cannabis products in his vehicle when he struck the boy at West Park Drive and Spanish Fork River Trail. Mr. Mills also admitted to using his phone just before hitting the child. This tragic accident underscores the dangers that pedestrians face every day in the United States. Approximately 6,227 pedestrians were killed in the United States in 2018, an increase of 250 from a year earlier, according to the Governors Highway Association. Candace Bond, an experienced accident attorney, said that one factor that has played a role in this disturbing trend is the fact that drivers are more and more being distracted by their smartphones instead of focusing on the road and pedestrians. That is precisely appears to what have happened in this case. Authorities will also examine several other potential factors in the case during the course of its investigation. Bond, managing partner at Bond Sanchez Gordon, noted that in cases such as this, it's imperative to have an independent probe conducted. Quoted, "The sooner the process starts, the more likely that key evidence that will benefit the victim's family will be gathered," Bond said, in addition to the diligent work of law enforcement. An attorney has the resources to interview expert witnesses, conduct defendant background checks, and review applicable insurance coverage. These procedures are necessary for helping those who have been injured receive the justice that they are entitled to. In most instances, pedestrians possess the right of way when crossing an intersection or a street, regardless if they are in a marked crosswalk. It is always a driver's duty to yield to any pedestrian. Pending the results of the investigation, the family of the boy may have the right to pursue a personal injury lawsuit. As Bond noted, the stresses and worry following a serious injury can be overwhelming, disrupting all aspects of life, including family, work, finances, and overall quality of life. Quotes, "It is vital for victims to hire an attorney when filing for a personal injury claim, which allows them to negotiate with an insurance company on behalf of a client," said Andrew Wright of counsel with Bond Sanchez Gordon. "Insurance companies often try to pressure victims to settle for a quick payout for far less than the case is worth. However, an attorney will vigorously advocate for their clients to ensure that they are treated with respect and compensated fairly." Thank you. Next on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. From the Yucatan Times, written by the Yucatan Times, marijuana legalization rushed by activists in Mexico. Activists demand the Senate proceed with legalization as soon as possible. Mexico City, Tasmadia, Mexico. On Sunday, July 19th, activists demanded that the Senate include the legalization of recreational cannabis in the next special session that begins July 29th. As a sit-in, the Mexican cannabis movement accused the Senate of possible contempt for the ruling of the Supreme Court of Justice of the Nation, the SCJN, which set December 15th as the deadline for Congress to legalize marijuana, considering that its prohibition is unconstitutional. Quotes, "We see a constant delay, a delay in this legislation. Now, there is already one more extension until December 15th, and there is a senator who wants to propose the ruling even more under the excuse of the CV pandemic," demounced Leopold Riviera, coordinator of the movement. Activists are holding a demonstration in front of the Senate in downtown Mexico City, where they planted 420 marijuana plants of up to 2.5 meters tall. With this miniature plantation, considering the first to be clandestine in Mexico, activists are putting pressure on the Senate for a law with four characteristics: free personal or associated cultivation, simple free possession, dignified treatment, and public spaces for safe and responsive and regulated consumption. Riviera is quoted as saying, "We decided to start this movement of planting weed and planting ourselves as citizens, as users of cannabis, and as responsible citizens against a law that clearly does not do justice, that clearly criminalizes, that is clearly useless." In March, the Senate discussed a ruling. In March, the Senate discussed a ruling for a marijuana regulation. There is no microphone. Smoking CV. In March, the Senate discussed a ruling for a marijuana regulation law that would allow people to possess up to 28 grams of this drug, avoid criminalization, its cultivation, and use for medical purposes. However, activists have argued that it does not comply with the SCJN and favors the interest of private companies. Quotes, "We've been here more than 5 months, and only four senators have come down. Who do they legislate for? What they're proposing is a cosmetic change, which is not going to solve the problems of unconstitutionality pointed out by the Supreme Court," quotes Pepe Riviera. Activist Pepe Riviera demanded that the Supreme Court not grant any more extensions to the Mexican Senate. Quotes, "The police are mistreating the people. They are mistreating the citizens. They arrest them even when they are not consumers. to extort them, to deprive them of their freedom, and that goes against the Mexican Constitution, says Pepe at the protest of the Mexican Cannabis Movement. Mexican Cannabic Movement. Very beautiful. All right, let's go. Let's go. Mexico City plants the cannabis center there. 420 plants. That's so cool. Okay, Smoke News Radio. Your host, Jason Brodsky. Next from NJ.com, originally from the Cannabis Insider. Will a President Biden legalize cannabis? Weed advocates don't like the answer. Despite a Gallup poll showing two-thirds of Americans supporting making cannabis legal, the Democrats are about to nominate a candidate for president who opposes it. Former Vice President Joe Biden was an outlier during the campaign for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination as he supported keeping marijuana illegal on the federal level. Proposed wording for the Democratic platform mirrored Biden's position supporting decriminalization and rescheduling rather than legalization. Joe Biden believes no one should be in jail because of cannabis use, campaign spokeswoman Rachel Thomas said. That's why he supports decriminalization, its use automatically expunging all prior cannabis use convictions and legalizing cannabis for medical purposes. But he also believes legalization for recreational use should be based on the best science, Thomas said, which is why he supports rescheduling cannabis as a Schedule II drug to allow for additional research into its efforts. In the meantime, Biden will leave decisions regarding legalization for recreational up to individual states, she says. Still, advocates of legalizing marijuana, whose position in an October 2019 Gallup poll was supported by 66% of the American public, said Biden doesn't go far enough. Joe Biden still has a long way to go if he wants to earn support of voters who are concerned about cannabis policy and the millions of citizens who have suffered due to its criminalization, says Justice Stikall, political director for Normal National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Biden will continue to hear arguments on why he should change his position and support legalization, says Morgan Fox, a spokesman for the National Cannabis Association, quoted, as we've seen over the last year, Biden's position on cannabis seems to be slowly evolving as he appears potentially open to further improvement on the issue. The vast majority of his criminal justice task force supports making cannabis legal and regulated, so he will surely be hearing the arguments in favor for better policies. From now until the election, the advocates will continue urging him to embrace descheduling and restorative justice at the federal level. Even if Biden opposes legalization, he won't be able to block the trend among states, said Michael Bronstein, a president of the American Trade Association for Cannabis and Hemp. Voters in New Jersey and elsewhere will weigh in on the issue in November and decide whether to make recreational cannabis legal within their own borders. Whether Joe Biden as a candidate knows it or not, says it or not, or likes it or not, it will be on the next president's watch that federal prohibition of marijuana will end. Bronstein said, quote, the very day the next president is sworn into office, they will do so knowing that not only did Americans vote them into office, But those same Americans voted to legalize cannabis in their states, and the pressure for change will continue to mount. Biden, though, has received praise for his policy by smart approaches for marijuana, which opposes cannabis legalization. The group founded by former Representative Patrick Kennedy, the husband of 2nd District House Democratic nominee Amy Kennedy. We applaud and appreciate her science-based approach that is equally cognizant of legitimate concerns regarding social justice and marijuana policy. The group's science advisory wrote to Biden, "We hope you will continue to uphold these important standards, and thank you for your steadfast commitment to public health." On Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, from health.harvard.edu, written by Harvard Health Publishing, "Is it time to consider using medical marijuana?" The stigma is fading, but learn the pros and cons before you try it. Despite the hype and popularity of medical marijuana, you may not be sure if it's something to consider. You're right to be cautious. The use of marijuana to treat health problems is still being studied, and we don't have all the answers about its risks and benefits. We do know that medical marijuana use among older adults is increasing. Quote, "Older adults tend to use it for physical ailments. Number one is chronic pain. Insomnia is a big one too. Older people have had a hard time sleeping, and there are a lot of other safe options," says Dr. Peter Grinspoon, a primary care physician with Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. So what is medical marijuana? The term medical marijuana refers to either the dried flowers or the unprocessed marijuana plant, which contains hundreds of chemicals or two specific chemicals derived from marijuana that are known to have medicinal properties. One of the two chemicals, tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, produces a high. The other, cannabinol, CBD, does not produce any sort of high or cognitive impairment. Quotes, "The two chemicals separately or in varying combination seem to decrease pain and to help with anxiety and insomnia. They are also thought to be helpful in reducing symptoms of many other conditions," quotes Dr. Grinspoon. "Those other conditions include arthritis, migraines, dystonia, a muscle disorder, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Crohn's disease, fibromyalgia, and post-traumatic stress disorder." Quotes, "CBD in particular is known to lessen inflammation and to be helpful in controlling epileptic seizures," says Dr. Grinspoon. Well, marijuana comes in many forms. You can obtain the dried marijuana flower buds, which can be smoked, vaporized, and inhaled, baked into food, or used as a tea. The plants are grown in various strains, each of which have different ratios of tetrahydrocannabinol and cannabinol. You can also find products that contain THC, CBD, or both chemicals. The extracts are available in pills, concentrates, which are extremely potent, oils, sibling drops, edibles like gummies and other candies, patches, lotions, and suppositories. While medical marijuana appears to have many potential health benefits, it also has risks. THC and CBD can magnify or diminish the body levels of the medications you take. That could be dangerous with drugs that must be dosed carefully with no room for error, such as the blood thinner Werfen, Coumadin. Taking THC by itself may cause an elevated heart rate, impaired coordination, confusion, disorientation, dizziness, fatigue, hunger, nausea, red eyes, drowsiness, dry mouth, elevated blood pressure, or a sudden drop in blood pressure upon standing. Quote, THC can also cause an anxiety attack if you take too high a dose, and it can affect short-term memory. If you have mild cognitive impairments, THC can make it worse, impair your judgment. Dr. Greenspoon says the risks of THC dependence and addiction are debated. Heavy users may experience withdrawal symptoms if they suddenly stop using it. CBD doesn't cause a high, so you won't be sedated while using it, but you will feel more relaxed. CBD side effects can include nausea, fatigue, irritability, low blood pressure, lightheadedness, drowsiness, diarrhea, or upset stomach. CBD is not considered addictive. THC or CBD? The question. THC is a stronger drug that might be helpful in certain cases. Think of a veteran with severe pain for an injury who doesn't want to be on opiates, or someone with severe pain from advanced cancer, Dr. Greenspoon says. But THC also has the disadvantage of psychoactive effects. For that reason, Dr. Greenspoon typically prescribes something high in CBD with the lowest dose of THC possible. You'll get to the right dose, he says, but start low and go slow. Most of the side effects come from taking too much. Now, if you're interested, medical marijuana is available in about 36 states. Most require you to have a diagnosed qualifying condition and all require a doctor's referral so you can legally obtain the drug. If you live in a state where recreational marijuana is legal, you can simply go to a dispensary to buy it. But Dr. Greenspoon urges you talk to your doctor before using any kind of marijuana for treatment purposes, not only to make sure it's safe for your health, but also to find out which chemical ratio you might need. Quotes, educate yourself as much as possible before you enter a dispensary, says Dr. Greenspoon. So you're not dependent on bud tenders, dispensary workers who mean well but don't have a medical background. His name was Greenspoon. That green spoon. Sorry. Okay. Next on Smoke News Radio. From MJ Biz Daily, great purveyor of information, written by John Troyer, read to you by Jason Brodsky on Smoke News Radio, proposed LED mandate could cost California's indoor marijuana growers millions. July 21st, 2020. Cannabis cultivator Alco in San Diego County, California, transitioned from HPS lights to LED as part of sustainability effort. Many California marijuana growers are up in arms over a recent proposal before the State Energy Commission that would require all indoor cultivation operators to use only LED lights by 2023. If implemented, the proposal could cost cannabis businesses hundreds of millions of dollars, the growers say. The proposal is part of a lengthy report issued this month by the Codes of Standards and Enhancement, CASE. It would force indoor growers to transition away from low-efficiency grow lights such as metal halide or HPS, high-pressure sodium, which are favored by some indoor growers over costlier LEDs. It's very important to consider the upfront costs and how growers will pay for that. Amber Morris, Director of Government Affairs for NorCal Cannabis, said Monday a recent webinar organized by the United Cannabis Business Association. NorCal Cannabis has roughly 70,000 square feet of indoor marijuana canopy. At what address? That has spent millions on building out. At that point, it's impossible for NorCal to transition to greenhouses in order to save money it would cost the company to comply with the proposed requirements. It would cost NorCal at least $5.6 million to install LED lights for the entire canopy, estimated by Bob Gunn, the CEO of Seattle-based energy consulting firm Synergy. He also estimated it would cost roughly $255 million for all California's indoor growers to change over. That figure is based on a 2019 statistic in the case report that found California has roughly 3.4 million square feet of indoor canopy license for cannabis cultivation. Gunn said LED lights typically cost about 60 to 90 more per square foot of canopy than traditional HPS lighting systems. HPS systems use more energy but are cheaper up front. Gunn also warned that financial costs of the CASE proposal would likely kill a lot of LED incentive programs. Sacramento-based Nimbus Cannabis used such grow incentive programs to build out its LED grow operation when it relocated to the state capital from San Francisco Bay Area. But Joe Cavero, Nimbus Vice President of Cultivation, warned that the upfront cost of LED lights is only the beginning of the actual conversion costs. Nimbus initially spent $500,000 on LED lights for a small-scale grow. We were covered for about 30% of those costs, but there are a lot more costs than just the lighting, Caballero said. He warned about a likely increase in costs for other needed infrastructure, as well as the time it takes to change growing operations so yields don't decrease. I'd say a cultivar needs at least a year or two to dial in their new process, and not all operators can get a state-of-the-art facility going to do that, Caballero says. Morris also noted that the CASE report did not take into account environmental requirements that are already mandated for marijuana growers, including compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act at the state and local levels. Growers are required to begin reporting their environmental impact mitigation efforts to the state by 2022, a mandate that wasn't mentioned in the new report. It seems like this new proposal is a second bite at the apple. We not only have to go through the CEQA compliance at the state level, we have to go through it locally. We are taking environmental impacts into consideration. This, to us, seems a little bit over the top. Public comment is being taken on the proposals until July 31st. Please email info@title24stakeholders.com. Barring a course change, the proposals are expected to be adopted in 2021 and would take effect January 1st, 2023. Thank you, guys. You've been listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. I'm glad to search out all this fun stuff online and see if I can bring it forward for you guys. Beautiful. And we have a little closer song, Jack Johnson, The News, and I appreciate you guys for listening very much. Have a beautiful, beautiful day.
A billion people died on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's sight. Well, Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullaby. That it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight. Well, Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear, so baby, close your ears on the news tonight. On the news tonight, the unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And Mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullabies.